When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to Monday's episode of the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. My name is Craig Cairns, and joining me today, he's got a festive jumper on. It's Craig Anderson.
Hello.
And he's in a very...
Reindeer.
What's that, sorry?
Reindeer, for the listeners.
And he's in a very festive mood. It's Tom Watt. How you doing, Tom?
Ho, ho, ho.
Yeah.
Fine, good. How are you? I'm
trying to raise the spirits here before we get started, Tom. Thanks for the assistance.
You've done a good job. You've already raised my spirits.
I just thought I would add an audio description for is it an audio description since they won't be able to see my jumper. I have like been toying with, because I mean they're a bit of an inefficiency, like Christmas jumpers, in the sense you can only wear them 1 month a year. So I was like trying to decide last year, because this is from last year, if I could get away with it in January or not, because it is just like reindeer. It's like a winter specific theme, but I've been told like by a couple of people, but it's the first time I tried it in January last year, I got told like, why are you wearing a Christmas jumper? So I've kind of scaled that back a bit, but at the end of the day, I'm not buying another jumper. So
I still listen to E17 Stay Another Day in January, so I think you can wear that jumper in January. I think that's totally fine. You can get 2 months out of it. We are here on the Monday after the League Cup final play between Hibs and Celtic. It finished 2-1 to Celtic, a double from Kyogo, two absolutely wonderful finishes from him. Hibs had taken the lead, I mean, about 17 seconds or something before they conceded it. We'll start with you, Craig. What were your initial thoughts on the game?
It was the best game. It was entertaining enough, especially in the second half, but I thought Hibs started really poorly. Like they didn't get a kick of the ball for probably the first 25 minutes of the game. Celtic just looked like they were going to steamroller them, run over the top of them, and then Hibs did grow into it a wee bit, and when they took the lead, I thought, you know what, they've got a bit of a chance there. And of course they may have done had they been able to hold on to the lead for more than like half a second, it might have helped. But they were undone by two, I mean, very poor defending, and we'll get onto that for both goals. Not identical goals, but identical in the type of failure defensively that it was. It was just a big ball over the top, and they were sleeping both times. Porto is the main culprit, I would say, for both goals. It kind of comes over his shoulder, but the quality from Kyogo is superb. It's just like pure technique. The first goal, the way he traps the ball and turns so quickly, and then the second one is A wee leaf out of Louis Moult's book, but I think actually Graham will not like me saying this, but technically probably even better than Louis Moult's, just that the way he takes it first time like that is exceptional.
I saw Chris Sutton say that there were Larson-like finishes, and I think that was very apt in the technique and the occasion when he came up with the goals, basically, and especially after an injury layoff, returning right after an injury layoff, basically, to be the hero on the day.
Yeah, I think the feeling was that if there was any kind of chance that he was going to be anything approaching fit, he'd be playing. I mean, he's been sensational this season, and Celtic have been okay, but having him on in the team is kind of as a focal point just makes such a difference. And you can see even not just in his finishing, but in the runs that he makes and the distraction that he causes, and the way that, especially in the second half when the game opened up a little bit more, the way that he was able to, like some of his late runs into the box and some of his movement that were causing as much problems as anything else. Just like a lovely football player. If it wasn't for the fact that he cheats so often, he would be my favourite Old Firm footballer in a very long time, because he's brilliant to watch. Just it's so frustrating, the diving and the theatrics. But he's a brilliant all-round striker. Like I think there were a lot of question marks about his physique, how he'd hold up in the kind of rough and tumble world of Scottish football. No problem whatsoever with that,
because nobody can get near him. His movement's in the league, so he doesn't need to be physical because nobody can get near him. And then every time you do, he falls over, like you say.
Yeah,
he's got that, like the going down stuff. It's like a mix. So it kind of reminded me of when Ryan Fraser played in Scotland. He's got the mix of him being so small and lightweight as well that he's a diver, and any touch probably is more to him because he's not that strong. So it's a lighter player. It looks so much more like ridiculous. Like there was even the one with Macy in the first half where you could just tell he was desperate for the hit to go down, and Macy did really well to pull out of it. But it's hard. I mean, you're talking about the player as a whole, but it's hard to not mention that side of his game. But at the same time, yeah, in terms of pure quality, has there been a more technically gifted Celtic player since like Mravčić in terms of what he can do with the ball? Nakamura maybe is close. He's that type of player, even though he plays a wee bit higher up the park than they do. It's very difficult to watch him and not just think, you know, you're really good. It's a very simple thing to say, but it's just what jumps into your head. It's like, this guy can play football.
It's going to be very interesting to see where he will end up, because he looks like the kind of guy that will end up in a top Spanish club or something like that. He does look that good. Sorry to kind of go into the negative a wee bit there on him during his heroic performance in a cup final, but I suppose we should get one other Celtic negative out the way before we continue. It almost became the Carl Starfelt cup final, with him missing that chance fairly early on and then just being a bomb scare for about 10 minutes or something, where it could have been it could have been over for Celtic. He gives away the corner, doesn't do very well from the resulting corner, and then, oh god, you'll have to refresh my memory, what was the score when Nesbitt robs him?
I think it was 2-1. It was 2-1. It was either 2-1 or 1-1, but I think it was 2-1. But that one with Nesbitt is like, he makes a mistake in the first place and just kind of letting Nesbitt pinch the ball off his toe and get in, and he makes a good recovery to get back. Now Nesbitt's obviously hampered by the fact he's on his weaker side of the park and doesn't have much support, so Nesbitt kind of does the right thing, but also simultaneously allows Starfelt back into position. But then Starfelt is so cheap in letting him get back on, like back away from him. It's like so easily beaten. And Hart, I thought Hart had a tremendous game again and turned up when it mattered again for Celtic. We are awaiting this like calamitous blunder that will cost them at some point, but it's not came yet. And yeah, I think Nesbitt should do a wee bit better, but Starfelt, it was just a combination of things. It's like so easy for the goalie, just like because Hanlon, he's tracking Hanlon 10, 15 yards. It's a long run that Hanlon makes to get onto that ball, and Starfelt just loses him. And then he misses a chance down the other end as well, around about the same time. And yeah, I just don't think he's very good. Like, I think he doesn't look like a player that Celtic have spent the amount of money that they've spent on. You see what you get with Julian. I'm not as sold on Carter Vickers as others are, but you see what he offers. But for Starfelt, he just looks calamitous.
And Craig, yeah, I don't know what they've seen in Starfelt. I think for the goal especially, that ball is not drilled in. It's not like he's got to react quickly. It's not like there's bodies all over the shop that he's got plenty of time. It's this floated corner that comes in. If he just plants his feet and anticipates where the ball's coming down, then he's going to be fine. I think, like you say, with Celtic still have a big issue with the defence. I don't think there is an awful lot of quality in the defence. Greg Taylor had a pretty good game going forward, especially in the first half, was kind of the main attacking outlet. But I don't think there is a huge amount of quality. There's still question marks over Julian. But most of them have kind of one flaw that either they will work on, or Postecoglou will work on, or the combined powers of other players round about them will hide that. Starfield's got four or five flaws. Like he loses his man. He's careless with his distribution. He isn't good with high balls over the top of him. He's not hit, like, his anticipation of what's coming next seems to be all over the shop. And I don't think those are things that a manager can fix. I think he's just not very good.
There is a lot being made of the penalty shout at the end, but what I've been saying, and nobody's been responding to me, so I don't know whether I'm just talking shite, is that Hibs, after the foul, have two opportunities to put the ball in the net. One of them, they hit the post. The other one, they blast over the bar from a sitter. Is that not the advantage being played and Hibs getting the advantage and wasting the advantage?
So I deliberately didn't reply to you because I thought, well, why not have it out on the podcast?
Because you barely slept, man. Barely slept.
I don't think it is. So there's a couple of things at play there. If that ball had gone into the net, you can bet your ass that the referee would have signaled as though he was playing an advantage. But he didn't signal an advantage at any point. And pretty much for a penalty to get an advantage played, you're looking at literally a player is about to have a tap-in or, you know, a really good chance, or letting it go for a second to see if they score before you pull it back. I don't think either of those chances were sufficiently easy chances for it to be given as an advantage. So I don't think there was an advantage being played. I think the referee just didn't see it or didn't think it was a foul. Well, one thing, it's very clearly a foul. It should have been a penalty. One thing I'll say is, at the time, I didn't see much of a reaction from the Hibs players. Like, I don't know if they were too... Oh, well, I was about to say that there was one exception. I think it's Doidge, when the ball... Doidge is number 9, right? Because that was what I was trying to work out. Ball rebounds off the post from the header. And he, as the ball's being headed, is, like, appealing and actually ends up, because he's too busy appealing for the penalty, ends up being like off balance and not being in position to get the rebound, which I think he might have had a chance of doing had he not been doing that. But beyond that, like, they were obviously, I mean, it was partly because they were also gutted at missing two really good opportunities. But I, watching it live, actually didn't see the foul either. I was probably too focused on the ball. So I assume that's what the referee's done. But it is a penalty, and I don't buy, I don't know if I was going to, I don't buy this, oh well, Celtic should have had one in the first half, because that one in the first half isn't a penalty. I can see they're both like similar types of challenges, but the Starfelt, what is Starfelt, is a really clear shove, whereas like McGinn on Taylor is like a nudge. And I don't, if VAR was in place, and thankfully it's not, because I don't want it to ever be in place, but if it was, the Celtic one wouldn't have been given and the Hibs one would have been given, and we would have had a controversy anyway. But that was a very clear penalty that was missed for me.
We should have a word for Ange Postecoglou, Tom. He has won a trophy at the first time of asking. I found it quite funny that recently some Rangers fans have been tweeting a lot about how Celtic have been scraping results while they've been swiping teams aside. And on the weekend where they scraped past the Dundee United reserve team with a penalty, their rivals were winning the League Cup. And yeah, Ange Postecoglou comes to Scotland. He's got barely anything to work with when he comes in the door. He somehow puts a patchwork squad together at the start of the season and isn't completely out of the title going into Christmas. And he's turned up with a bit of silverware and he's on the tails of Rangers in the league.
Yeah, and I mean, he gives good press conferences. He's very articulate. Like, he's as a manager in these things, as a manager and not my manager, he's a breath of fresh air. You know, as a manager of a rival club, I think he's conducted himself very well, because Celtic were an absolute disgrace. They were almost like, I think we said previously that they almost had started the season with like a 10-point disadvantage over Rangers just because of the shambles that they'd been left in at the end of last season, with players leaving, players leaving because of their contract situation, the kind of malaise that they had at the end of last year where they just kind of downed tools at the end. He's come in, he's not had much time to work with anything, but he's put his first trophy in the trophy cabinet, and there's a sense, and these things can turn really quickly, but I think there's a sense that they're starting to get momentum. Yeah, they're grinding out results. Yes, they're finding late winners from things. You know, they're not blowing teams away yet. If I had the managerial ability to manage at that level, I'm not convinced I would be asking my players to try and score three or four when my defence is as ropey as I think Celtic's is. But going forward, it's clicking. It's starting to work. And I think you could almost summarise the whole League Cup final with Hibs had their chances and were, you know, ultimately quite unlucky with some of the decisions that didn't go their way, but they're kind of a team looking for an identity. They're looking for something at the moment. Celtic know what their identity is. They're just not quite there yet, but I think there's a sense that that will come. He doesn't need a huge amount if they can sort out the defence, if he can make a couple of signings to give them a bit of a few more options off the bench, because the drop in quality when they've lost a couple of bodies is fairly large. But they're getting there. The signs are good.
I think that's one of the things you've said there. I think is huge, Tom. That I don't know which players are Ange Postecoglou signings exactly and which ones aren't. I mean, you obviously Kyogo is, but you just look at the players that they've brought in. Recently, we've spoken about one. There's another few, like McCarthy, that have been strange signings or haven't quite worked. But you look at the likes of Hart, Juranovic, Kyogo, Abada, all these guys that have come in have contributed and have been very good signings. And you're right that the issue is the drop off after these guys and with all the injuries that they've had. But if they continue with that kind of rate of signing success and quality, then Rangers have got a real challenge on their hands for the league. I kind of touched on something there, alluded to injuries there, Craig. There was another one in this game for Turnbull. I quite liked the analysis from Craig and Michael Stewart on this, where they were talking about that's his first ever muscle injury, and he's not really one for getting those kind of injuries. I know he had a really, really bad one, but that was kind of different. And is there now questions being asked about whether some of these players are... there's a mixture of playing too much and playing too high in intensity?
Well, and I think there's always question marks when you have a manager who plays like that and they're not necessarily exactly the same tactically, but Bielsa's another manager who's always kind of been, they always talked about his really high intensity. And I remember the when he managed Athletic Bilbao and yeah, they got to the Europa League final, and they just started to run out of steam at the end of a season because they played so many games, and Celtic will be hoping to get far in Europe this season as well. Like they're in a tournament where there are some decent teams in it, but they've shown they're capable of kind of playing. You know, Betis are in the top four of La Liga at the moment, and Celtic beat them, and would have won over two legs if you want to make that stupid type of analysis. Or with a drawn, sorry, over two legs. And they are going to expect to have a long season. They want to win everything they play in. They need to be careful about not picking up too many injuries. The conditions, like if you're a manager, like Postecoglou is mainly managed in hot countries so far, and it's different again going out in a cold December, even on one of the, you know, the best pitches and stuff. And they do generally, the pitches aren't that bad in Scotland anymore, but they're going to pick up these types of injuries because there's just coldness impacts on it. I'm not an expert, but having playing the amount of games that they do, not rotating the players because they don't have the depth, as has been touched on, all of these things contribute. And it doesn't surprise me that teams that play with high intensity are going to get more injuries because they're being asked to do more. They're asked to put their bodies through more. And so it didn't surprise me. And there's a question mark about the kind of cost of that as to whether, you know, if you're a manager, and I tend to think of him as a manager who sees his players as like objects to move around on the pitch, and that's fine, but it can impact. You know, David Turnbull probably doesn't want to play for Celtic his whole career, and so any injury that holds back him, there's a cost to his prospects, and so he has to be careful about not damaging players. An odd injury here and there that happens, but you don't want to completely burn out young players, because he's got some young players in that team. But at the same time, that's the football supporters want to watch. So there is a balance. I mean, they're a fantastic team to watch. Like I'm generally interested in watching them play football, and you can't always say that about Celtic teams previously. So there is a balance to be had, and when you're winning trophies at Celtic, you're always going to get away with it.
And where did it go wrong for Hibs on the day, Tom? Is it as simple as that they went into it with a rookie manager, and Celtic weren't at their best on the day, so maybe somebody more experienced like Jack Ross would have been able to take advantage like that of something like that, like he did in the semi final against Rangers, or did the management do a good enough job on the day, and the Hibs just weren't clinical enough and were too poor defensively at key moments.
I don't know what anyone could have necessarily done differently. I mean, Hibs were lucky to be in the game at half time. They were really poor in the first half, and Celtic weren't that much better, but they had the lion's share of possession. They were, they had the one that Paul Hanlon cleared off the line, which was just kind of remarkable that didn't go in. But they were kind of lucky to still be in the game because they were incredibly poor in the first half. The game changes on whether or not they hold their concentration when they score. Because, I mean, they hadn't done... Like, if you were to set up against Celtic and you were to look at what their weaknesses are, the weaknesses are defensively. The weaknesses are, balls into the six-yard box, 6 to 10 yards out. They have not been good at that all season. You know, those kind of hanging crosses. Joe Hart's not comfortable coming and dealing with them. The defence is not very good, is not good enough knowing what to do with it. So they get their chance, they score from it. They just need to keep the head. They just need to, like, you would be saying, you know, just let's take this thing out of this for the next 10 minutes. I mean, there's the video that's been up on Twitter of the Hibs fans all celebrating, and, you know, a minute later it completely kills the buzz. And I have been at Hampden enough times and been in the vacuum of the opposition support when the Celtic fans go crazy, and it just sucks the life out of you. That was the pivotal point. Just keeping hold of, keeping hold of their emotions, not getting overexcited, keeping the head, because both goals, I mean, as good as both goals were, they're both from lapses in concentration.
Okay, I meant to say at the start of the show, actually, that we still intend to do as many in-person podcasts as possible, but for now we're doing this one over Zoom just because so close to Christmas, we didn't want to risk ruining one of our Christmases, or all of our Christmases. So we thought we'd just get this one out over Zoom, and the details what's coming up over the festive period at the end of the show. But we're going to move on to the four league matches that were played at the weekend, and we'll start with Motherwell beating St Johnstone 2-0. A very, very comfortable result for Motherwell. Just one shot on target for St Johnstone. That's their, by my reckoning, I think they've had 9 shots on target in 6 matches or something along those lines. That's their 6th, in those 6 straight defeats that they're on. In that time, they've had 1 goal, which was an own goal. The last St Johnstone player to score was Ali Crawford on October 30th.
I did think you were going to say Ali McCann for a second there, and I was going to be
that would have been quite something. That. Yeah, that would have been great, but not quite. It was Alistair Crawford that got that one. They've got a really, I mean, one of the worrying things now is they look like they're starting to concede more goals. They've conceded 2 in both their last 2 matches, and that's, even if you look at this poor run that they've been on, that's still very un-St Johnstone. Like, they have a very crucial match coming up against Ross County on Wednesday. Did you see any of you guys see any of this match?
Yeah, watched a fair bit and watched the highlights back. I think we'll do St Johnstone first. I think the most alarming thing about them now is they're easy to play against. And the biggest problem that they've got is that they are easy to play against. If you've got Ross County, if you're playing Ross County at the moment, you know you're going to be in a match. They're scoring goals. Ross County are scoring goals. Dundee are kind of usually cold but occasionally hot, and they've got an ability to kind of pull results out of the bag. Both of them are fairly decent ish going forward for the bottom sides. St Johnstone look incredibly soft at the moment. They're not. They've got 9 this season. Only scored 9 goals this season. But defensively, they're looking incredibly soft as well. And I think they're starting to creak a bit. I think that. I mean, they had a poor start of last season and ultimately had, you know, the best season that they've ever had. I think they don't have the squad. I mean, presumably Davidson will already be looking at strengthening, but the defence doesn't look anything like as they were always like niggly defensively. They always stayed in a game, even against, you know, Rangers and Celtic. They lost a goal. They would rarely get steamrollered. Now they're getting steamrolled, and Motherwell absolutely trounced them. Like, it was 2-0, but it was so comfortable. And every time there was a ball over the top, Kevin Van Veen was you know, rinsing out whoever, McCart or Gordon, and for pace and strength. And they just look a bit feckless at the moment. And I don't know where the goals are going to come from. There isn't a, with the exception of, you know, Stevie May 7-8 years ago, there isn't a proven goal scorer in this team. And if you've only scored, like previously they would always be quite good at sharing the goals around. They've never been like a particularly high scoring team, but there isn't anybody else sharing the burden of goals. Last season they had the number of options up front. They could go with kind of 4 different variations on the 2 and the 1 or the front 3 that they wanted to play. This season they don't have that, and they're in trouble. They're in serious trouble.
I think you just look at the transfer business that they've done in the summer. Like, it's been in hindsight especially very, very poor. Like, okay, there was all the high profile stuff about, you know, the way that both McCann and Kerr left on deadline day and all that, and that in itself is a problem. But the issue is beyond that, like, they lost three key players from that cup winning team and those two plus Melamed. But they also lost like two decent squad players in Conway and Tanzer, who neither of whom were brilliant or anything for them last season, but they contributed, and they've brought in absolutely nothing. Like, all of their signings have got, what, one, two, three, four, five, six players on loan. None of them have really been very good. The signing at Crawford, like, other people rate him. I've never really thought much of him. He runs about a lot, well done. And Cammy McPherson was a baffling one. They've not got much out of Middleton. He's a player that I do quite like, but he's not quite done enough. And then all the other ones, all the players they've brought up from English football, none of them have done well. As is usually the case, it's very rare, to be honest, to sign players on loan from English clubs and them have that much impact. And so the business that they have done has been terrible, and therefore the squad is just so much weaker than last season's squad. And that puts them at a major disadvantage if you're a team who has been grinding out results, and that's what they did all of last season. Nothing wrong with that. It doesn't take much for that switch to be flipped. As I say, as I know, when from Kelly doing it, we were grinding out results, and then we just stopped, because suddenly the parts of the team, the players who turned that grinded 0-0 into a 1-0 or a 1-0 defeat into a 1-0 win weren't there. All of a sudden you just keep losing games, and they have a poor squad now. They've got some good players in it, but on the whole, a complete lack of depth. Whoever's been putting the squad together between Davidson and whoever else is involved have not done a good job this year, and last year they did, and that's kind of what it boils down to. But do I think they have a manager and players who could drag them out of it? Probably, but I am becoming, you know, with every passing defeat, becoming less convinced of that.
And for Motherwell, they had Johansson back. He was excellent. They had Liam Donnelly back in the centre midfield, and 20-year-old Dean Cornelius. He opened the score in. Absolutely tremendous touch and finish into the bottom corner. And Motherwell are on a decent run at the moment. They have four wins in seven, I think it's something like that. And all their wins, they haven't conceded a goal. And yeah, my favourite part of this match, it was kind of related to something Tom said, and that was Sean Rooney seemed to fall over after Kevin Van Veen held his hand.
Yeah, I mean, it was quite a day for people falling over on the pitch at Fir Park with Sean Rooney doing that. But it was, Motherwell were tremendous. Motherwell they are a team who, I think this is what you get with Alexander. They might not turn up sometimes, but when they turn up, they're a really good team to watch. It's kind of a bit of a continuation from Robinson. They steamroller teams, they run over the top of them. They run more than teams. They physically are stronger than teams, but they have technique in that team. It was a beautiful goal from Cornelius, like the touch, the technique for a young guy to do that. And then his interview I saw on Sports Scene after the game, really, you know, a local boy, a supporter of the club. Their youth system has done really well recently, Motherwell. I think it's one that goes under the radar a wee bit, but you look at even just Turnbull, Campbell and potentially now someone else coming through. They made good money off James Scott. Jury's out on him, obviously, as a player. They've done really well out of it recently, and he looks like he could be another one who potentially influences it. But when Van Veen is playing, he's just a fantastic footballer, and you saw that again. He's a player who goes missing sometimes, but when he doesn't go missing, when he's there, the technique he has, and he has a bit of a wrecking ball as well. He's someone that you're willing to pay to watch.
Yeah, and Tom, I feel like there's no doubt in what the front three can do now for Motherwell, but having players like Johansson and Donnelly back really kind of, I mean, those kind of players improve upon what they had in there before rather than just adding more depth. And yeah, they're looking a tasty side at the moment.
Yeah, they are. I didn't see, I mean, I said this before, I didn't see this coming at all. I didn't think they'd signed particularly well. I thought they'd lost high-profile players, and I couldn't see where the creativity was going to come. I think they've fully embraced this kind of, like Craig said, this kind of wrecking ball, and having three wrecking balls up front, which means they are unpredictable. It means that you don't always know what Motherwell are going to turn up, but they're entertaining without being intricate. If you don't have tons of players that can thread the ball through an eye of a needle, then don't try and do that. They're very, the front three are all really good at playing on the shoulder. They're all niggly players. They're all, but they all work incredibly hard, and I think that's what they've got running throughout the team. There isn't necessarily tons of guile, but there's an awful lot of there. It's a very cohesive team. We know what they seem to have now. The players are coming back. We now do know what the 11 is going to be. They've got a very good goalkeeper. The defense looks pretty solid. That midfield looks pretty settled now, and they've got a mixture of everyone's got the work rate, but there's a mixture of good set pieces. They go along really well, and it's fun when they do. Yeah, they're a really difficult team to play against when they play like this. And I mean, it was 2-0. It could have comfortably been more had Motherwell really wanted to push on. Both two very nicely worked goals. St Johnstone contributed to their own downfall. But Motherwell playing like this are, at the very least, are going to be a top six side.
Talking of teams that are starting to look a bit more settled, two others are Livingston and Ross County, who played out a 1-1 draw in the most confusing match to watch in Scottish football history, I believe. I don't know who decided on this. I mean, I made more sense of the last 5 minutes through the fog at Dens than I could of most of this match. I just kept having to remind myself that the team in yellow, all yellow, at the Tony Macaroni is not Livingston.
Yeah, like their home. I don't understand. I don't know if it's a Livingston thing. I didn't understand why they've got a black home strip this season. It's weird. But anyway, yes, it was incredibly confusing. They should have banned Ross County from playing in yellow. Tell them to wear any other colour, because I, watching these highlights with the volume off, so I subsequently watched them on Sports Scene, was very confused when Livingston scored first. And it took me a long time to work out what was going on. I thought it was like a disallowed goal or something like that. It just wasn't on. But once you got beyond that, it was a really entertaining game as well. Like, you know what you're going to get from both teams now. They both kind of struggled to find their identity at the start of the season, but as you say, you now know Livingston are leaning back towards Livy ball, if you want to call it that, which I will, because I've not got a better word for it. But they've probably got a wee bit more guile than they have had previously.
Speedball or something, I was thinking.
Yeah, let's stop before we
get sort of speedball. But,
and Ross County are really, I mean, they're becoming quite a good team. They're becoming a team now who you think are probably moving away from the bottom of the league, because they have good players and they have guys who maybe struggled to start and are now finding their feet in Scottish football and are showing their ability. And they'll be really disappointed. The big question mark over them is the fact that they've conceded late goals in a couple of games in a row now. Deservedly, Livingston equalised in this game. County deserved to take the lead when they did, but Livy threw everything at them towards the end of the game, and it felt like that thing with County's mentality of like they were just creeping towards their own goal. And if you invite that much pressure and you're not that good a team, maybe if you're like the best defensive team going, you can afford to invite that pressure. But when you've got poorer quality players, you're probably going to concede chances like the ones that they did. And it wasn't just the goal, there was a couple before that.
What do you think?
They could have lost it. I mean, Holt nearly picks out the winner right at the end.
Yeah, he was unlucky. What did you think about the goalkeeper for the late equaliser, I thought that he maybe wasn't positioned great. If he wasn't going to make an attempt to kind of jump and get the ball, he was a wee bit further off his line than he maybe should have been. And I thought he therefore didn't have quite as good a view as the header. He sees it very late, obviously, but I just felt that if he's a wee bit further back, he can maybe see it a little bit quicker, and he can just be covering his near post. And if he makes him, it's another thing. I feel like he doesn't make himself that big because he doesn't have enough time to react to it. So am I being a bit harsh on the keeper here?
A wee bit. I mean, I think there are a lot of bodies in that. There were, you know, like I the first time I saw it, I thought like it doesn't even look like it's,
maybe he was confused by the color of the strips.
Well, that honestly, I watched it on Sports Scene, and then I watched the highlights back, and even in the knowledge that they were wearing the wrong shirts, even at the end, I still couldn't get my head around it. It reminded me of a few years back when Scotland played Sweden in Sweden, and they wore blue shirts and we wore yellow shirts, and there was a story of one of the members of the Tartan Army that had a little bit more to drink than everybody else, and at full time was delighted that Scotland had won 3-0, and had to be gently reminded that A, Scotland were playing in yellow, and B, we don't have Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
I wonder who he thought Zlatan was.
I would love to know who he thought Zlatan was, but no.
Kevin Kyle's grown his hair
and developed a touch. I think it was a little bit harsh. The first time I saw that goal, I thought the goalkeeper could even come and just try and punch that clear, but there are like four bodies in it, and it's a good header, and it's kind of straight at him, but I think he's a little bit unlucky that it doesn't, you know, hit a knee and go in a different direction. I actually think I would be more critical of Strajic for the first for County's one, because as good a goal as that was, it's not straight in the top corner. It's not hit with like lots of pace and dip and swerve. It's a really nicely placed shot that, if he were unsighted, then, you know, fair enough. But he gets a hand to it. It should have been a stronger hand. And is it the biggest goalkeeping heller of the season? No, but I think he could have done a bit better with it.
Yeah, I agree with that on Strajic in particular. I think that a better goalkeeper saves that shot, and that's fundamentally it. He's a mid-range goalkeeper in the league and might concede that, but none of the better goalkeepers would have done. I don't want to like full out criticise him for it. I think that could have been prevented, that goal. Probably the same is true of the other one, to be honest. I think neither of them are like egregious blunders, but they are things that could have been stopped.
Okay, let's move on to the Kilmac Stadium, where Hearts came away with a 1-0 victory thanks to a Jamie Walker goal off the bench. Remember him. McPake was absolutely scathing of Jason Cummings both before and after this game. He was left with 11 fully fit players. He had Alex Jakubiak on the bench, who wasn't fully fit, who was the one sub who came on, but the only other players they had on the bench, I think, had one or two starts between them or something like that, and Cody Panther was one of them in the League Cup. So really, really threadbare squad for Dundee. I think I was at this game, but I feel like they really competed well, considering given the circumstances. I feel that McGee and Fontaine, I thought, were brilliant. I thought that McCowan and McMullen, I mean, they didn't threaten much at all in the game, really, but McCowan and McMullen both caused a few issues down the sides of the back three, and for both teams on the day, to be honest, anything they created, there was, or got near to creating, the final ball wasn't there, or there was just something off. And Jamie Walker came on in the second half. The fans were singing his name as he was warming up, and he came on and he instantly gave Hearts more of a goal threat. They had their moments, but they had threatened very little in front of goal. And one of the first things he does is he's got a works. I can't remember who it is that lays it off to him, but it works a great opportunity at the edge of the box and lifts it over the bar. It was a poor finish. Then there's the one where he's through on Legsdens and the whistle's long gone. Now it looked at the game. I can't say this with 100% certainty, but it looked at the game. The linesman definitely puts his flag up, and it looked at the game as if the foul had happened, Colin had let it go, the offside had been given, and then he brought it back for the foul. Now, it could be that Colin didn't see the flag or had already made up his mind that he was pulling it back for that foul. But it was a bit unlucky for Walker, because he does well to round Legsdens and slot it in, but I think you can kind of see Legsdens pull out of it.
It was a very tight offside decision, if that is what was given, because it might have been, but it was definitely not a clear offside, I would say. Well, one thing I would say with the Dundee team, you're right to say they were short on numbers, but actually the 11 they put out are all established first team players.
It's not
so
terrible,
I always think
it's not.
I mean, it's not. They might have been missing a couple of first team players, but it's the depth issue. It's the inability to change it, which always becomes the problem, I think, because you looked at that team and you went, well, if they'd picked that team without any injury crisis, you'd have went, oh yeah, that's a Dundee team. But yeah, I watched a chunk of this game while you could see it.
It actually wasn't as bad at the game. It looked much worse on the television. We could see pretty much everything up until about the last 10 minutes, and then we couldn't see the far end that well. And Robbie Nielsen said after the game that pitch side it was fine and it was never really in doubt. If it'd been an hour later or something, then yeah, the game would have been in doubt, but it looked a lot worse. I could see Jamie Walker's goal fine, and it looked like you could barely see anything on the pictures and the highlights. Sorry, I just wanted to add that.
No, that's fair. I'd already invested an hour of my life on Saturday into watching a game that never reached the end, so you'd be glad it did finish. But I thought it was a pretty poor game standard-wise. Yeah, as you say, both teams tried hard, but the quality was really not there from either team, which you'd expect from Dundee, to be honest, because I think that's been their problem all season. They've had effort, a lot of it, but not enough quality. Hearts can and should do better in these games, but they won't care, because sometimes you just got to get the win, and they got the win. And having a player like Walker, I don't particularly rate Walker, but the one thing he'll do is, when he gets an opportunity, he'll be direct, he'll try to make things happen. And sometimes in a game like this, this is all you need. And you said, you know, I agree with you, like, his introduction just brought a wee bit of an injection of something different into Hearts. And while the goal doesn't directly lead from being that, it's just a right place at the right time thing.
But he's already shown a threat before that.
Yeah, exactly.
And on that, by the way, he has a very good scoring record for Hearts. I think it goes unnoticed how good his scoring record is. And yes, you can argue that some of it was in that really high scoring season in the Championship. But still, I couldn't quite pin down the exact figure, but I had a look around, and it's somewhere in the high 40s, early 50s he's scored for Hearts. And that's very good by
it's good for a midfielder who, as I've said, I don't think is very good. Like, it's not the worst record at all when he's had spells away and so on. But yeah, it was a win that Hearts will look back at the end of the season and say we got 3 points, and it won't be remembered for much more than that. But that's fine. Dundee, I'm a wee bit worried about, because as I've said kind of a lot, I quite like watching them. Like, and that's why I do tend to probably watch Dundee games if I'm on a podcast. I kind of gravitate towards them, because I think like they're an interesting team to watch, but without Adam in particular, they don't have a lot of quality. I think Griffiths has been a major disappointment in general, and I think Cummins obviously wasn't playing this game, but in general is probably maybe not quite good enough for this level, which I didn't expect from him. But I think his attitude, and you see with things like that, like where his priorities lie, and the same is true of Griffiths, and that becomes a problem. You can maybe carry a player like that, but when you build a squad around kind of loose cannons, Adam himself obviously being one as well now, you're always running a risk there. And I do worry that if Adam is out for any length of time, be it with his injury or with anything else that might happen, he will be a big miss, even though his influence, he doesn't run a lot, but his quality is what they're missing. When they don't have him, they just lack any real genuine quality. They've got lots of good willing runners. It could be difficult if they don't do good business, and I don't necessarily think they will.
Yeah, because he was, to an extent, pulling up trees for them earlier in the season. Let's go on to our final game of this evening, and that was Rangers 1, Dundee United B 0. Now, Dundee United were without a number of players for this one, which was definitely nothing to do with their trip to Newcastle, because all the players were in their beds watching the F1 at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, okay? That's definitely what happened. We're definitely swallowing that and not questioning it at all. Yeah, there was a number of teenagers on the side. They were missing a number of key players. I'm not going to go through them all, but they brought in some players that even some United fans had never heard of before. The likes of 16-year-old Craig Moore came in and did well. Mockery. It was a very young central midfield, actually, in particular. Darren Watson came in an unfamiliar position and played very well as a right wing back. And in the end, Tom, they were undone by a really stupid decision from McMahon. It looks like it's kind of sort of half instinctive, but when you look at it, I mean, there's no obvious immediate danger that he's kind of cutting it out from.
Yeah, they were good. I mean, Dundee United were good. They weren't just they didn't just kind of hold their own and batten down the hatches. I mean, I when I saw that team, I thought that, right, this is just going to be brutal. You know, Rangers are going to just run over the top of them. They could score 6 or 7 here. But Dundee United, in early on, were the ones doing all the running. I mean, Rangers did, I don't know what Giovanni Van Bronckhorst has seen in the career of James Tavernier at Rangers to make him think that he could be potentially play as a centre-back. That experiment was started and reversed very, very quickly.
Changed his mind very, very quickly on that one.
I mean, yeah. Okay, we've got all the evidence we need. This is not going to work. But because of that, and because it was a bit of a reshuffle, it did give Dundee United the impetus early on, and they had a couple of sniffs of goal, and they were in it. They were in it throughout. They were only really undone by this moment of madness from McMahon, where the ball... I don't know if he's expecting the ball to go in a different, like if he's expecting the cross to come in a slightly different direction or what, but he just kind of, he looks like he's trying to head the ball, but it's at arm height and he throws his arm out at it and it hits his arm and it's definitely a penalty. I think everybody knew that it was a penalty. Trevor Carson kind of just stops, like there's not even any point in debating it. But even after that, they had their chances. I think Watson hit the bar in the last minute, and they hung in there. And it was an impressive performance from Dundee United. I think they put in a lot of running. They were very, very good off the ball. And they knew how Rangers would come at them. I think Carson had made a couple of decent saves from. One from Morelos, one from Scott Wright. But they kind of kept Rangers at arm's length for large parts of this game. And I was convinced that if Dundee United got away with, you know, a kind of 3-0, they would have done pretty well from the day's work. But I think it's probably too much to say they would have deserved a point, because Rangers were the better team and did have the better chances. But they more than held their own.
I wonder if GVB was trying to do a Gordon Strachan versus Gibraltar at the start of the game. Just play one centre-back and two full-backs and then build your team around that. Which we went 1-0 down in that match.
It was a wee bit unconvincing from Rangers. But
their
again,
first ever, I think, was it their first ever goal or their first ever competitive goal?
I've got to say, like, I don't understand people who think it's embarrassing that you concede a goal to a team when you beat them 6-1. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I know. It's just pretty funny that it came in.
It's funny
tried
at
to
the time.
Smart.
It's only embarrassing if you don't then immediately go up the park and batter more in against them.
Like, I also had a bet on it.
Yeah, well, exactly. But the Rangers, it's unconvincing, but they won, and we've said that a few times, and if we keep doing it, that's fine. there's really not a lot to comment on their performance. That's the thing. Like Scott Wright, I think, continues to look quite bright, but maybe it doesn't impact the game enough to become a regular. Good to see Patterson get more minutes, but for God's sake, like, we don't need another left back. So get him over, play Tavernier left back.
Yeah, no, put the more experienced campaigner over there,
yeah,
please.
So there's not like loads to comment on their performance. I think the thing with United and the young guys coming in is they've, Courts has built, because he has been brave earlier in the season and picking some of these guys and giving them minutes and giving them games, it's much less daunting to then have to chuck them all in together. Whereas you can imagine some other clubs who don't have that same faith in their youth players. And it's always hard to say because maybe they don't have the faith because the youth players aren't good enough and Dundee United's are, you don't know. But it would have been much harder for them to chuck together a midfield of young guys and them all to play as well as United's did. So there's that bit of balance, I would say, in general. And United will be happy coming away. They'll not be happy because they lost, but like, as you say, they don't take a big hit off of that and they'll be looking kind of forward at what they've got coming up. They're obviously in a wee bit of a slump, which they'll need to address, but the fact that they've got young players that they can trust, it's always so good because it gives you so much more flexibility in the transfer market to go out, and rather than having to buy three or four squad players, you can condense that money together to buy one really good, or sign one really good player, because you know that if you need to, the young guys will step in. It's nice to be able to do. They look to be in a good position, because that's, if you want to establish yourself as a top flight club when you come back up, you need to turn into a team who are comfortable, who have good youth system, who have players coming through and can build a good squad. And so that they're in a nice spot at the moment. We'll obviously see what the new year holds for them.
Yeah, I totally agree about you saying then what they add to the squad there. And even in this match, they showed that they added a vibrancy and a fearlessness that you kind of feel that they've been missing a little bit recently. So yeah, it's interesting times. And this result could, even though it's a defeat, it could just be the confidence booster they need to kind of get their season back on track, because they are on quite a poor run at the moment. I think that's us, guys. I think we should wrap up and go
wrap up a nice Christmas pun.
Exactly. It went through my head, but I couldn't think of anything smart enough to say about it. So that's why there was a long pause. It's just left for us to wish a Merry Christmas to the listeners when it comes. Thanks once again for another year of your attention. It's really been appreciated. And we're going to have a show, I believe, some point at the middle of next week. And then we will be having another show after the January matches, just ahead of the winter break. But there will still be Patreons going up. So get yourself over there. Get yourself subscribed if you aren't already. We are going to go over there.
If you are subscribed, buy it for someone else as a Christmas present.
Excellent. And we're going to talk about Tommy Wright, who was told, apparently, that if he did not win the match at the weekend, he would lose his job. He did not win the match. The match didn't finish, but he did not win it, so they sacked him. And we're going to go speak about that. And what's next for Killy, and why is it going to be Jack Ross? So if you want to listen to that, then come over there, and we will see you all soon. Speak to you later, Craig.
Bye-bye.
Speak to you later, Tom.
Cheers.
And Merry Christmas, everyone.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.